I'm talking today with Corey Matthews about the upcoming online Death Cafe and their work as an end-of-life doula. Corey, to start off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be trained as a death doula?
Hi, yeah, I'm an artist. I'm a painter here in town in Prince George. And I have for a long time been intending to take death doula training. It's been available for the last couple of years through Douglas College. I had been a birth doula for a number of years, and I took my training there for that as well. And I think like the pandemic kind of offered the opportunity to, I don't know, take a little bit of a break and think about things differently. And I took the training in October of this year. So so I got my certification. It's not a regulated kind of program in Canada. Like there are various certifying bodies, but anybody can be a death doula. It's like birth doulas. It's completely unregulated. And for me, it's not like a career change or a career choice. It's really just something that I wanted to pursue, partly because a lot of people in my life have died, and it really gives you an opportunity to see how fearful our society is of death and things related to death.
Yeah, absolutely. So perhaps you could elaborate a little bit on what the role of a death doula is and what the training's like. Kind of what are the logistics of training for that?
So the logistics are fairly straightforward, especially now that everything's online. Mm-hmm. So I took the training, which was, I think, 6 days. I think it was 6 days of sort of 9 to 5 online lectures and workshops and sort of exercises and so on. And the role of a death doula is really very similar to the role of a birth doula. Mm-hmm. Death doulas, they help to navigate the dying process, right, which can be fairly complicated and involved. They help with everything from making plans for treatment, plans for assisted dying, making plans for funerals, care of the body, and also just helping relatives who are trying to navigate the heartbreak and the difficulty of having someone that you love die. Mm-hmm. So one of the trainers actually put it really nicely. She said, you know, a death doula is like water. You just run to whatever the low part is, whatever needs doing. And that can extend to things like childcare or like dishes that need to be done or whatever, but also to things like vigil, sitting in hospice, keeping records of people's medications, communicating, you know, it's exhausting, right? To be, to be caring for people that are terminally ill. And so I think it's kind of a reclaiming of the natural process of dying, right? It's a thing that takes practice. Mm-hmm. and a lot of us don't have that kind of practice in the Western world particularly.
Yeah. So I'm interested to hear your impressions on kind of the current state of affairs for end of life care, and also for how we, you know, as a society, whatever that means, kind of deal with death as a topic and as a life experience.
Well, end of life care in Canada is wildly various, right? So, you know, I know, for example, that the hospice situation in Prince George is one of the sort of happier, better funded, lots of volunteers, really, you know, well-run organizations in BC. And yet I also know some people that are involved in hospice in the Lower Mainland who are really scrambling for funding and for volunteers. So there's a fair bit of variability in the care of dying folks. But sorry, I just sort of trailed off there and forgot the second part of the question.
Well, I'm interested to know kind of how we as a society, broadly speaking, approach death, and specifically where we can improve.
Well, I think that we're really fundamentally a death phobic society. So mm-hmm. I don't even think that there isn't a real approach to death in a lot of ways. It's a subject that we avoid at all costs. And even in situations where people are dying, a lot of the time death isn't directly approached, right? Mm-hmm. We really believe that that the natural state of things is that people live as much and as long as possible, even when that's just not on the table, right? So mm-hmm. we take heroic measures with people that are terminally ill quite often. And that's not always appropriate. That's not always what people want. It's not, you know, so there's a lot of quality of life issues for people at the end of life. And there's a real lack of, there's a real fear, right? There's a huge amount of fear of losing people. There's a huge mm-hmm. amount of fear of the actual physical process of dying, which is, you know, often quite upsetting. There's a sense that we all want to just kind of slip away at the end of our lives or die in our sleep, but that doesn't really happen very often for people. And much of the time when people end up in a hospital or in a situation where they're critically ill, they're unable to communicate. They're not able to speak. They're not able to communicate what their desires are for their treatment. And so we have a long way to go in terms of just normalizing the kinds of conversations around death and dying and what our desires are and what our understanding is of what death looks like, because we don't get to be in the room very often when people die. And I think that's more and more true with the pandemic happening. People are dying alone, which is really, I just think, unthinkably terrible. But, you know, we don't, I think maybe one or two times in our lives, we may be in a room when someone dies. And it's a critical part, I think, of being like a fully functioning human mm-hmm. is to understand those kinds of major transitions in people's lives, right? And so, yeah, I think to just have the conversations is so important. And I think it's becoming a bit more common, a bit more usual. There's certainly a craving to talk about mm-hmm. death and dying. People really, you know, we're confronted with it constantly now. I mean, we're both in the middle of an extinction event and of a global pandemic. And so it's an important time to start considering questions around mortality.
Yeah, so I imagine this is kind of one of the motivators for hosting this Death Cafe. Can you tell me a little bit more about the event on Saturday?
Yeah, so Saturday night, a couple of women that I attended the Douglas College training with and I are going to do a death cafe. And a death cafe is a concept that originated in the UK, I don't know how many years ago, but some time ago. And they've really been gaining traction in North America. I have attended a couple in person when I lived in the Lower Mainland. And of course, now everything's online, so we can just sit at home and talk on Zoom. And they're really very unstructured. Like, so it's a free event. Normally they would take place in a coffee house or a, you know, people would have tea and cake or something. And, you know, who knows what people will be doing at home. But it's not really a particularly structured conversation. And it's not like a lecture or, you know, a presentation or anything. It's really just a situation where people come in with their questions and their concerns and the things they worry about and wonder about. And they just have a room to talk about it in, which, you know, it's not something that we really get to do very much, especially mm-hmm. now that we're not even socializing. So, yeah.
So what differentiates a death cafe from, say, a support group for bereavement or group therapy, something like that?
Yeah, it's not a support group in any kind of context or really a grief group or anything like that. So it's not structured. It's really just mm-hmm. a sit down and chat and let the conversation go where it will. Situation, whereas a bereavement support group or something like that would have much more structure and a much more sort of in-depth conversation about the individual's experience of grief and mm-hmm. And so on.
Yeah, I was reading so a little bit about a, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say it'll be an hour and a half or 2 hours, and we're trying to kind of limit it to about 18 people. If there's a lot of demand, we'll run a bunch more.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just kind of want to let it go where it goes.
Has the response been positive so far? Have you had lots of interest?
Yeah, people have been really interested and curious. And yeah, this is actually something. So I just 5.5 years ago, my then partner died unexpectedly of a stroke at a quite young age. And that was really when I first started thinking about doing death doula training and having these kinds of conversations and going to death cafes. And there's quite a community around death and bereavement and so on. And so a lot of those people have been very enthusiastic about the idea of getting together to chat about death, which is lovely. And then quite a number of near strangers have also been have shown like a fair bit of interest.
Yeah, I imagine there's lots of people who are looking for an outlet for these conversations when they're so difficult to have sometimes with kind of the people closest to you who are also often experiencing that sense of loss and sadness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it extends to things that aren't, you know, aren't necessarily just, you know, people that we love and care about facing, you know, terminal illness or COVID or whatever. It's just the general sense that we're in a time where there's a lot to confront emotionally. And I think it's really great to see so many people really eager to engage with that.
Yeah, reading a little bit about other death cafes that have happened elsewhere, it was interesting to see some of the breadth of topics, some as broad as kind of what is death? What does that transition mean? All the way down to the kind of individual experience of it. It's really interesting.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and there's a number of resources. There's a woman in Alberta, Sarah Kerr, who runs a number of more in-depth kind of conversations about, you know, what happens to your consciousness when you die, what, you know, things like that, that are maybe a little bit, a little bit less general in their themes.
Mm-hmm. So you've touched on this a little bit already, but in your opinion, how can talking about death, to use the phrase on your poster, help people make the most of their finite lives?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can't really fully understand what your life is unless you have a real sense of, you know, of beginning and end. That's how we interpret any story, right? And we happen to be in the middle of it most of the time. But I think to think about, you know, your legacy issues, the things that matter most to you, there's nothing quite like death to show you what your priorities are. I remember when my partner died, thinking like I just didn't know what to do with myself. And I just went down to my studio and painted for 6 months and barely saw anyone. And it really showed me what I cared about the most, you know, that I cared so deeply about my children and my paintings, and that a lot of other stuff that I used to worry about, mostly money stuff, I really didn't worry too much about because bigger forces were at play, right? Mm-hmm. And so it really does lend, I think, important context to the way we treat our relationships, the way we treat our careers, the way we treat our lives. And death is a real distiller of of our motivations, I think.
Yeah. So this is a pretty broad question, considering the kind of intentional structurelessness of the event. But what are some of your hopes for the Death Cafe?
I think the thing that I really like about all of this stuff is laying out a little bit of a groundwork for people to form connections, feel a sense of community, feel that they're not alone with their questions or their fears. I really just like the kind of alchemy of putting people in the same space and seeing where things go. And so I don't have any real ambitions for anybody in the group. I just really hope that everybody feels like listened to and heard, and that it maybe allays a little bit of the fear that we feel. I think just articulating our fears so often has a real mitigating effect, right?
Yeah. And how about any fears? Do you have any concerns about kind of being in that facilitator role? It's such a weighty responsibility when people are talking about things that are oftentimes really, really emotional and heavy for them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do worry. I always worry that I'll open my mouth and say something that, you know, I think is appropriate and somebody else will not, or that I crack a lot of jokes, and that's not always the best coping mechanism in every situation. But I think that, I mean, the main role, both of a death doula and as a facilitator of something like a death cafe, is just to cultivate listening. And I worry about failures in skill, but I don't really worry too much about failures in empathy or in listening. And I don't know, I think it is a heavy responsibility. The main thing that I think is really important for people to know is that death cafes and also any work that a death doula ever does for any family is completely confidential. So in the space of the death cafe, those Zoom meetings are not recorded. Nobody has access to transcripts or anything like that. People's stories are safe. And I think, concerns about safety and privacy are always really important to people in the sort of extreme moments of life, and those things, I think, just honoring that is enough in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, I think just having that confidential supportive platform is
exactly
important
yeah.
work.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too.
So. How can people find out more about this event and also potentially future events if you decide to host them?
So as a real social media addict, we've got an events page up on Facebook, and tickets, which are free, are available through Eventbrite. And that's just so that we can keep track of how many people are coming. And in the future, yeah, well, I just started a Death Doula page on Facebook, which I will, link to on my personal page. And death cafes, generally, if people have interest in knowing more about the history and so on of the death cafe, there is a death cafe website. So there's a fair bit out there, and there's a lot. And we're not the only ones running these things. My friend Nicola is running one, I think, on the 16th, maybe. So... yeah, there's a bunch of them around. I of course would love for people to come to ours, but they can go to any death cafe they like.
That's great, and we'll also link to that that Facebook page you mentioned in the article on canada-info.ca. Anything else you think people should know about the death doula service or the death cafe?
I am not really. There are resources. They're fairly easy to find online. There is a Canadian Death Doula Association, and they have listings of all of the current death doulas in Canada that choose to be listed with them. Again, it's not super regulated, but there's probably a death doula in your town. I might be the only one here, but I know one in Williams Lake. They're around. And ultimately, the goal is just to kind of, it's not to have more death doulas, it's to let everybody know that that's work that they can do as well in their own lives, with their own families and for themselves. And it's a reminder of community. And that's the thing I think I would like people to keep in mind, is that this isn't a rarefied thing or even a real profession. It's your right to engage with your dying loved ones and their care and your own as well. So yeah, that's what I'd like people to know about it.
That's great. Corey Matthews, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.